Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Samantha Clark from Lexington, Kentucky, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May the 31st, 2012, episode 415. Good morning, Horse World.
Good morning!
It's Thursday.
Kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome back to Horses in the Morning. Thank you so much for listening. And hi, Samantha.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Good.
I feel like I'm so on Bob and Tom in the Morning or whatever they are.
You are.
Like a rock show. What is this?
You are. You're on the coolest morning show in the world that talks about horses. So that would be us, because we're the only ones that are on every morning and talk about horses. Well, Samantha, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
And, of course, we're talking to Samantha Clark, new host of the Eventing Radio Show, my past compadre on the World Equestrian Games show that we did for a couple of years, and, of course, a writer for Eventing Nation and has her own blog over there at Eventing Nation. And we're going to talk about one of the articles that you did that just popped up yesterday that I just found fascinating, and we're going to have to talk about that with the listeners this morning. Jennifer, do we know if the chat is working yet today? Do we know if yesterday it was off? And
Yesterday it was off. Today we've got connecting, so that's a good sign.
Okay.
It seems to be working.
All right. So the chat is working. If you would like to chat in our chat room during the show, you can just go to blogtalkradio.com, and right there on the homepage, you'll see Horses in the Morning. Click on us, and you'll find the chat right on that page. We appreciate you joining in today. And Samantha, you and I, we've done more shows together in the last couple of days than we've done in years.
I know you only asked me to do the Eventing Radio Show, and I seem to be all over the place. I don't know what I've let myself
We had her on Stable Scoop to welcome her, and now I forced you into doing the morning show here to fill in for Jamie. Jamie is off, for those that missed a couple episodes. She's off in Spain. She posted a couple pictures yesterday, Samantha, of her and her hubby Chad riding Andalusians on the beach.
Oh,
so.
How sickening.
I know. I think she's kind of happy over there. She looks like everything is going well in Spain. I don't know if she's going to come back, really. I don't blame
her. Why would
she? Except I did see that the Spanish banking system is failing, and they're having all kinds of trouble, and they're trying to figure out a way so that they don't crash and have this run on the banks. So I hope she can get home. You know, I hope she has enough cash that she can get out of there if everything goes down. But, Jennifer, what's on today's show?
On today's Audible.com Thursday edition, Glenn and Sammy Sam will be bringing us a little flashback with a chat from Weg Rainer Lisa Coulter. We're going to catch up with her live from Canada. And our second flashback of the day is with none other than the Chronicle of the Horse, where Lisa Slade will be figuratively galloping us through the 50s. Some really interesting stuff in that article. My how things change and my how they stay the same. And wait for it. Born on this date in 1819, Walt Whitman, American poet and essayist, as well as his alter ego, born in 1930, the man famous for things like Make My Day, Clint Eastwood.
Wow, that's great, Jen. Thanks. Although I do feel quite old now, Glenn.
Clint Eastwood was born in 1930. He's old. My goodness. Jeez.
It's the important stuff, you know?
Yeah, I didn't realize he was that old. All right, time for the Daily Mini. I have to give my Daily Winnie to two different people, and they both get this. Happy birthday, happy birthday to Fran Yerga. It's her birthday. Of course, she has. It's Fran's birthday.
Happy birthday, Fran.
She's a writer, and she's probably off to the. All the serious journalists in the world are meeting in Williamsburg this weekend. As in the horse world for the American Horse Publications Conference. She's probably heading off to that. She writes, of course, the Hoofcare blog at hoofcare.blogspot.com. So happy birthday to her. And then also horse girl Madison Scott, who I know listens to some of the shows from Texas. Happy birthday to Madison. All right, it's your turn.
My Daily Winnie goes out to Three Chimneys Farm, which I was lucky enough to visit on Tuesday, not only because they have the sire, Flower Alley, who is the sire of I'll Have Another, who's going for a historic Triple Crown next weekend, go I'll Have Another, but also because they do so much for the second careers of racehorses and to make sure that they look after their own. So go Three Chimneys.
They're fantastic. I want to talk to you about that,
and
that article.
Fantastic.
I just want to talk to you about that article that you did. It was titled Three Chimneys, Second Careers in Flower Alley, and it was over on – you can find it on Eventing Nation. Just go to Samantha's blog there. I thought it was great. You put a lot of pictures in there. We talked a little bit about Flower Alley here on the show last week because he was standing at $7,500, and we had a whole discussion on whether we thought his fee would go up next year. So any word from them on his fee?
You know, I did not. But Jen did tell me that he's become much more popular, obviously, since I'll Have Another. And
I
I think he had two runners in the Oaks, and he's had another. Some of his offspring have also done. I mean, I think it's been eclipsed by I'll Have Another, who's done so well. But he has got a lot of other offspring who are also doing well because he's quite a young sire. And she said that when he retired, he was one of the best of his year, but not the best. But he is doing well, not just with I'll Have Another, but with others. But he's squeezed in. Another thing that's interesting about Three Chimneys is they ride all their stallions every day. Brian is this amazing man, just extraordinary. He has an eventing background. He has two sons. He coaches youth soccer and youth baseball. He's also apparently a trained masseuse. He's an artist. I mean, he's an amazing man. He rides these stallions who are, all very different and quirky and strong, but he rides them very sympathetically. They're not training for anything. They're not going to any competitions, but he rides them. He just wants them to have fun every morning and use themselves and be comfortable and strong and happy. So I was lucky enough to see him ride Flower Alley, but we had to wait because they were squeezing in a breeding. He's become so popular this year that they're squeezing in breedings all the time. And luckily, Flower Alley is one of those horses that's a very strong work ethic, is sort of on the muscle the whole time. So that doesn't matter. He can do a lot of that. And Jen did say that his book already for next year is filling up. So I don't know, but they do have a very good website. They're good about maintaining their website, and they have a very active Facebook page, too, with all sorts of great contests and things like that. I would encourage you to go to the website, and I would encourage you to go on the Facebook page and check it out. But I did not ask about fees. That's typical me. I'm not very good at things like that.
That's okay.
But I know that they're one of the very, very few farms. I don't think I'm not sure if there's any other farm at all that rides their stallions.
That's what I was going to say. That's the thing I found most fascinating because I didn't know any others that did that either. I think it's a terrific idea, and it helps them, you know, have a mission other than that one they have. You know, it gives them something to do every day.
Yeah, and it makes – and also because they're one of the most open farms. They Jen Reutzer, who does their marketing and communications as well as lots of other things, she said that She estimates they have between 20 and 25,000 people come, pure tourists, not breeders, not business people, just people coming to look around the farm and see the stallions. And she says, you know, they go out probably 15 to 17 hours out of 24, but just having been ridden as well gets the giggles out, takes the edge off them, and it makes them, you know, a little easier to deal with when they have, you know, some of the tourists probably get a little closer than they should and take more pictures and want to, aren't maybe experienced horse people, but just want to see their favorite horse or the stallion that they've come so far to see and touch and do things that perhaps they shouldn't. So it was fantastic. It was the most wonderful morning, and I left on a complete high and was buzzing all day. It was a nightmare to be around.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a beautiful farm too, obviously. You know, all of those farms out in Kentucky are beautiful. But Three Chimneys is different that way. You know, people think that you can just go to Lexington and you can go out and you can visit these farms, and most of them aren't that way. Most of them are locked up tight. You can't get in. They don't want you in. And, you know, that is one of the big differences about Three Chimneys. And they have a ton of horses there.
They do, and it's thousands of acres, but it was also a lovely personal touch, very friendly. The horses are absolutely the number one priority, of course, but as safe it is, as, you know, as professional and as it is and as immaculate as everything was, still, you know, they know all the little quirks about the horse. Oh, outside Flower Alley stall, they had this sweet drawing that I think you probably saw in all the press. There was a story about Hope, the girl who was the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Yeah.
She'd gone to the Derby, and they actually put her up on I Am Lava Man, on Lava Man, who is the pony for I'll Have Another. And because that was her dream. So then horse people are just as superstitious as anyone else. So then when I'll Have Another won the Derby, they said, well, gosh, now she's got to come to the Preakness too, because she might be our good luck mascot. So she was thrilled, obviously. So they took her to the Preakness, and they actually gave her the garland of black-eyed Susans, apparently. And she drew this sweet picture of Flower Alley, and that's pinned outside his stall. So, I mean, it's sweet. There's, you know, this immaculate farm with all these million-dollar horses, and then outside his stall is this sweet little pencil drawing by Hope. And, you know, that's a picture that Hope drew, isn't it? So they don't forget the little things. They know all the little quirks of the horses. Everyone knows everyone's names. And it was lovely. And they do so much for the horses. Every horse that's ever passed through the gates of Three Chimneys, whether it was born, bred, or raised there, they try and make sure that they know what happens to it when it's finished racing and look after it and make sure that it goes to a better life afterwards, that it doesn't end up in a kill pen or they're pretty responsible, and it was very, very impressive.
Do you think that Hope's now has to be invited to the third leg?
She absolutely is. Yeah, she'll be at the absolutely she is.
I didn't realize that. Well, that's great.
Yes, she'll be there.
What a ride this is for her. You know, she had the Make-A-Wish, you know, Foundation got her set up at Kentucky, but that was supposed to be it, and she was just supposed to meet the trainer and the horse and everything, and that would be her dream, and now look at her, world traveler.
I know, she'll be at the Belmont. Hopefully, let's cross fingers, hopefully she'll be in that winner's circle. Wouldn't that be something?
That would be cool. That would be cool. That'd be cool for me, too, because everybody knows that I've been playing this.
So Glenn, you
I'll have another! Bowie Meister, photo finish! I'll have another!
Just saying.
You missed that. You didn't bet on the first one. Will you be betting on the Belmont?
I better bet on one of them, or the listeners are going to revolt, because I didn't bet on the first two. So I better at least put a couple bucks down. Got to figure out where to bet down here.
They say it takes three times to teach a fool, Glenn.
And that's probably true. Well, Samantha, there's another, while we're talking about the Belmont and things going on up there, apparently they're not taking any chances. You know, O'Neill, the trainer for I'll Have Another, of course, has been suspended and has had numerous violations over the years for drugging and things. And, of course, he's denying them all. But then they've also had the problem with the New York racing officials and board They've let them all go, and the governor's appointed a new board. They've just had all kinds of trouble in racing in New York here. So now they have put strict measures into place. They're taking all kinds of measures. And what they're doing is when the horses arrive at the barn on June the 6th, they will be given a blood test and will be sent to the state drug laboratory for immediate review. So they're going to be drug tested immediately when they get there. The horses will be under guard and a limited number of, in a special barn, and a limited number of people, trainers, veterinarians, and certain staff will be permitted to enter. Each of the visitors' comings and goings must be formally logged. In addition, searches and checks of all equipment, feed, hay, and bales will be conducted, and veterinarians will be escorted to the specific horse. The only thing that's permitted is Lasix will be permitted on race day. But they are going overboard to make sure that they don't have any trouble with this race.
And they're not even allowed to wear the flare strips, which is strange. Why is that?
Yeah, New York, it's a New York rule. Actually, in New York, you're not even allowed to wear it for other competitions in the horse world either, not just racing. But
no,
that's apparently
big
the
one.
No?
I did a little research on that yesterday. It's actually a rule from the New York Racing Association, which is not the New York State Thoroughbred Racing Authority. They are the authority for three specific tracks.
Oh, okay.
Aqueduct, Belmont, and Calder. I think it's Calder or Saratoga.
Not Calder. Saratoga.
So it's just those racetracks that the New York Racing Association is in charge of that you can't use the flare strips. And the article that we had the other day was not particularly clear. In New York State, the flare strips are allowed in everything but those three thoroughbred tracks, including barrel racing, yada, yada, yada.
Okay, got it.
So
it's even
more bizarre. It's like, well, what, you can race in some other track in New York, but not at Belmont with the flare strip?
Yeah. You know, one of the other things that the New York Times found, this is the article I found that I read, they got their hands on apparently a confidential email. And what it says is that that O'Neill himself is going to have extra scrutiny put on him for these races. And according to this email, the horses cannot be in any way treated without a board investigator present his horse, and that he should not allow treatment of any horses by mouth or in feed without conferring with a board investigator, who first will log the treatment and discuss the reasons for the treatment. And apparently he has to give over his veterinary records for I'll Have Another and any other horses he may be running in the days of Belmont, no later than at 10 a.m. Each day after any treatment. And apparently they're going to be keeping a close eye on him. So they don't want any trouble up there at this race. It's probably a good thing because then with all the trouble he's been in and all the allegations and everything, if I'll Have Another does win, then at least we can rule out that anything was done. There won't be any of those allegations after. I think it's smart that they're doing this, actually.
Well, I say good luck to I'll Have Another, and I think it's going to be a terrific race. I can't wait.
Me too. 2 weeks, right? Not this weekend, but next weekend. I think it's
the following weekend.
So. And we can't.
Meanwhile,
I can't. I'm not allowed to text Jamie because she's going to be on an airplane on her way back, and she doesn't want a spoiler. So I can't text her this time like I did the last two times.
She doesn't. Oh, see, that's why I'd want to know as soon as possible. I was like, tell me quickly.
She wants to watch it when she gets home. It's like, darn. Okay, I'll text you, Samantha. That's what I'll
do. Tattersall's is going on in Ireland.
What's that?
Tattersall's is going on in Ireland. There's a big event on in Ireland right now.
Oh, is that right? And it stopped raining there so that they can get them in.
It stopped raining. William Fox Pitt is leading, so nothing changes there. But what were you going to say? Meanwhile, what?
Well, I was just going to say, let's talk a little bit while we have the chance here about your new show, the Eventing Radio Show. You're taking over for Chris, and you put out your first real episode this week. So how'd it go?
I think I had great guests, so thank you to them. They helped me out. That was terrific. And it was fun. It was a little bit nerve-wracking, but it was fun. I enjoyed it. I had Kathy Wieshoff was wonderful and was my co-host. And we talked to Susie Harrison, who's a wonderful, she's a local elementary school teacher here in Kentucky, and she manages somehow to teach Pony Club and ride at advanced level eventing. and she's super. And we also talked to Dr. Werner. She's a Kentucky girl originally, lived in California and did all her medical training. She's the only surgeon here in Kentucky, equine surgeon at Haggard's. And she's going to be a regular contributor. And we talked about trailer emergencies with her and also with Dr. Slovis, who's a surgeon at Haggard's, and he does all the emergency stuff there. So that was interesting. We talked to them. And
we're going to have Samantha. We're going to have a little bit of that later on in the show. A little bit about the trailer emergencies and what you do. I took a little clip off of your show for that, and we'll have that a little bit later on.
Great, yeah. And Dr. Wern also events herself. She's terrific, and her sister Kristen is works for the Jockey Club. I think you might have talked to her. She's the one who arranges. She does the Jockey Club Thoroughbred Incentive Program.
Yes. We did, actually.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Well, that was a good segment, you know, and timely, of course, with the Pollard's trailer accident. And it did make
terrible.
Me think that's something, you know, you do emergency planning, and, you know, we live in Florida now, so we had to start thinking about, you know, what do we do in case of a hurricane and all that stuff. But, you know, a trailer accident's not much. I haven't put much time and thought into what would happen if, you know, had a trailer accident, my trailer flipped over. You know, do you try and get the horses out yourself? All of that stuff. It's not something I ever really thought about before. You know, maybe you have. I just never really thought about
it. Oh, God. Oh, it's awful. Glenn, do you know, I had not an accident. I had an incident, and it scared the life out of me. And, you know, I haven't. That was part of the reason why I sold my horse, because I was trailering a lot and didn't want to trailer anymore after that, and didn't really want to ride much after that. And everything that they, you know, everything that Dr. Laura Werner and Dr. Slovis told you not to do is what I did. you know, they say don't go in, and of course that's your first, you want to go in and you want to see your horse. My trailer didn't turn over, it spun around a few times, and we ended up in the median, and just terrible. You know, I went into the trailer. Luckily, the horses were standing, but the partitions were squashing them. But I had no idea what to do. I do handle situations like that quite well. Like, I tend to go into coping mode, but I didn't. You know, I would probably handle it a bit better, because at least I have some idea of what I'm supposed to do. But never mind.
Yeah.
Now at least.
You know, it is tough. I mean, and, you know, I'm trying to think. We've had occasions where Jennifer, I'm trying to remember. Haven't we had an occasion or two where we've had to take the horses off along the highway? I do kind of remember that from years ago. But I think that wasn't from accidents. It was more from, flat tires and things.
Yeah, we have one. There was one before. This was pre-Glen, where we had to unload the horses. But we were always able to get into a parking lot. We never had to do it on the shoulder of the interstate. I really can't imagine doing that.
I did remember carrying around one of those yellow, what are they called, that you change your tire with, and having to use that once. But it's just horrible, horrible, horrible. So
Samantha,
and I didn't carry an emergency kit, and that's what Dr. Werner said. It's a good idea to have, and you should ask your vet for. You know, always carry an emergency kit with some drugs from your vet, you know, some sedatives and some anti-inflammatories. I never had that, and I probably would now if I was trailering. And, you know, just God forbid it should have happened, but at least you'd be more prepared, or I would be.
And learn how to change your tires.
Yeah, exactly. that's the other important thing. We certainly had to change enough tires, and you're right, those yellow little ramp things are the best things ever for that. We were going down. We were hauling a two-horse or a four-horse trailer, and we were in Harrisburg, and we were on the bypass, like six-lane highway around Harrisburg. And Jennifer looks out. She was driving at the time, I think. And you looked out the rearview mirror and saw one of the tires from the trailer actually crossing the highway. It had come off of the trailer, had sheared, the axle had sheared, and the tire was crossing the highway and going through traffic to the other side of the highway, and we're in the passing lane, three lanes over. So she had to try and get over to the side of this busy highway, get pulled off the highway to see what, you know, if the second tire was still there, what the story was. It was a dual axle, but fortunately, if it was a single axle, it would have been a nightmare. But, yeah, we actually had a tire come off and roll across the highway. I think everybody that hauls has had those little things happen.
Well, and then a friend of mine said, thank God they had an empty trailer, but they were going, it was quite icy. It was early in the morning, and they said they were driving, they got an early start. They were driving from Kentucky down to Florida, and as they were going, they went over one of those bridges, and they saw their trailer overtake them and go past them in the truck.
Oops.
It had somehow come unhitched. I know, thank God it was empty. And actually, no one was hurt because the roads were pretty empty. It was really early in the morning. So that must have been a pretty surreal thing to see. They must have thought
that
they
is surreal.
We need more coffee, darling. Let's.
Yeah. The trailer just passed us. We're obviously not awake. You know, we had our spare tire on the way down here on the two-horse trailer we have that's starting to look like a Craigslist bad ad now. But on the way down here, she was just hauling furniture and stuff in the trailer. I was following her. And we pulled in at the one gas station to fill up, and she goes to pull out. And all of a sudden, on the road, rolling down the gas station area, one of those big truck stops, is her spare tire. The whole thing with the attachment to the trailer and everything had fallen off the trailer. So the metal piece, the tire, everything's there rolling away. So we had to pick that up and put it in the back of the trailer. But, you know, it just goes to show you that trailer. I don't know what they do about trailers, but, you know, once they get past a certain age, they just start falling apart. They have a lifespan, that's for sure. Planned obsolescence. Hey, before we get to our first guest, Samantha, I wanted to mention, you remember hearing about the lady in Dixon, Illinois, the quarter horse lady, Comptroller Rita Crundwell, who stole all that money. You remember hearing about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've covered it a few times. She was the city controller, and she ended up stealing money. Well, they have filed, the FBI has filed a new set of papers updating their charges against her. They originally had thought that she stole around $30 million from the taxpayers over about 10 years. They've revised that now, Samantha, and saying that the horse girl had, now she's accused of stealing $53 million over the course of 20 years by funneling city funds into various bank accounts that she controlled. $53 million. They also say now that they had estimated that she had 311 horses, and now they're saying that they think she has between 350 and 400 horses. They're looking for the rest of those. And they think, obviously, that these horses were bought with the help of the taxpayers of Dixon, Illinois. And
how can they not find them? How can she hide them? How can you hide 400 horses?
Well, I'll tell you how. Apparently, she has farms scattered over 11 states, Illinois, Wisconsin, Texas, Connecticut, North Dakota, Kentucky, Michigan, Florida, Ohio, Georgia, and Oklahoma. So this is pretty big investigation that they're doing. But I thought one of the funny things in the article was her names for some of the horses. You want to hear some of the horse names? Because some of these are pretty interesting. The first tells you a little bit about, you know, her thinking at the time she was stealing $53 million, because one of them was named Secure with Cash. Another one was named Potential Fortune, and another one was named Red Carpet Rita. Now, she had some colorful names and a little bit body names in there, too, like Bathhouse Booty, Girls Love to Party, Willie Sizzle, and Pack and Jewels, Box Tucks and Leather, and Lips a Lickin'. So she had some interesting names in there, too. But I guess if you have $53 million, you can name whatever the hell you want, even if you stole it from the taxpayers of Dixon, Illinois. So I don't think that they have even come to the end of that story yet, either. I think by the time she comes to trial, we're going to hear about a whole lot of other things that were hidden from the FBI in that one. That'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out. Moral of that story is it's probably not good to steal. You're eventually going to get caught. Now, let's do our commercial for Audible.com. And then Lisa Coulter, one of our old spotlight riders on the 2010
fantastic
radio show, is back with us. Jennifer, I see your note there. What order did you want to do this in?
You tell me.
Okay, so we'll take Lisa, and then we'll do the other guest right after that. So all right. So let's talk about Audible.com first. Audible is one of the coolest things that Jennifer and I have ever used. It is the place where you can find books on tape, books on audio. It's so cool because they now have over 500 different devices that you can play Audible books on. I happen to listen on my iPod. I can also listen on my Android phone. They have applications for your iPhone and for pretty much any MP3 player you have or any smartphone you have, you can get an Audible app for. We have listened to over 100 books since 2002 when we first started with Audible. They have over 100,000 different books that they have put on audiobook. I am now listening. I'm listening to a bunch of different books. I'm listening to Bill Gates has his latest book that's out. I'm listening to Steve Jobs' book. I'm listening to Hunger Games. I just got done with the second of the trilogy, and now I've started on the third.
Yeah, the kids and I listened to that all the way down to a collar and back a few times, and then those events we did in Georgia, that kept us going.
Don't tell me what happened. I just started the third book.
No, I don't want to know.
So don't tell me. But what good books they are. I mean, what you talk about creativity this lady had in writing those books. But so you can just listen, any place you want to. And one of the cool things is right now through the Horse Radio Network, if you're a fan, you can get a free book and 30-day free trial with Audible. You just go to audibletrial.com/HRN, audibletrial.com/HRN. There's a link on our website as well. And you can get a free book to give it a try, see how you like it, and then if you like it, you can continue your membership with Audible. We absolutely love it. I don't have time to read books. I listen to books, and it sounds like you're the same way.
Yeah, perfect for driving.
It is. It is absolutely perfect for driving. I also listen when I'm doing the dishes or boring jobs like sweeping the house. So you can listen anytime after you're done listening to our show, that is. So it's audibletrial.com/HRN. All right, Sammy, why don't you introduce our next guest?
Oh, I can't wait. It's been so long. This is pretending to reunion week. Lisa Coulter, welcome back to the Horse Radio Network. Well, you might have been back already, but welcome back. I can't wait to catch up with you. And welcome back to the Horses in the Morning Show.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
What's been going on? Where are you?
Sorry.
You caught what?
Oh, I caught Glenn last year at the Rolex, and that was fun. I meant to go by the booth this year. Glenn, were you there? Because I meant to come by, but I just was swamped.
Yeah, we didn't actually get to see any of the Rainers. They were like in their own little world down at the other end of the park, and I didn't get to catch up with anybody.
Oh well, next year.
Next year. How'd you do out there?
Oh, I did really well, thanks. I think it was fourth or fifth in the individual, and our team I think we got fourth on our team. We did really well. I have a new horse I'm getting used to, so that was a good place to get him out.
And since I haven't seen you in 2 years now since the World Games, but you've literally been all over the world since then. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing, Lisa.
Yeah, it's been good. I was fortunate enough to go to the World Finals in Sweden. Was that last year? Time just flies. And so I took a horse over there. Actually, we took a couple horses and had a good go and good finish and that was amazing. So Sweden was good. And then I've just been all over North America showing and just trying to keep up.
Yeah, and of course we both have 10-year-old daughters. How's Clancy?
Yes, thank you. She's great. She's amazing. So she's following me around. We spent the winter in Arizona because I was training there, and so she came and was homeschooled, which wasn't her favorite thing, but she got through it.
I'm always fascinated by that. Does that mean that you have to homeschool, or do you find someone at the shows to do it?
Actually, I brought my dad along because he's retired, and I'm not a good school teacher.
No, I wouldn't be either, and especially not my own children. I think I'd rather teach someone else's children.
Oh, I'm horrible. And so that becomes no fun for both of us. So, but my dad, he took it very seriously. And they did very well. So that was, I'm thankful to have him. So he comes along whenever he can, and he helps me with her. So we had a really good winter doing that, and it allowed me to train really hard. And then I came home. I'm in Canada right now, and I'm off again. But she's going to finish school, so she'll come with me to the NRHA Derby, which is our next big event.
Fun. Where is that?
That's in Oklahoma City.
Oh, brilliant. And how many horses do you, it's so different to eventing. How many horses do you have on the go at any one time?
Well, I'm kind of down right now. I probably only have 4 or 5, prospects that we're developing or that are developed. I lost a couple this year. Not, you know, they're alive, but they, you know, they just got tired. Like Hollywood Aces, he's actually a little girl's horse now because he just got tired of showing at that high level. And so I bought two, and they're amazing. But I'm still, that's an ongoing monthly process trying to find new prospects that we can show at the FEI events. So I'm down, actually. I'm down. I need some horses.
Now, Lisa, where do you
find them? Do you find them in Arizona? Do you find them, like, I don't know. I imagine, you know, you find them on amazing ranches in Wyoming. But where do you look for them?
Yeah, that's a good question because there is a bit of, a process to it. Because so many of our events are based on the 3 to 6 year olds, and then the FEI begins at 6. So a lot of horses are tired, or they've been shown too many times. They've already peaked. Let's put it that way. And so my goal has been to change that somewhat and keep these prospects longer. Which I'm sort of a little bit of a pioneer. Well, I'm not a pioneer, but there's other people trying to do that. But it's really hard. So lots of times, what we do now is we're buying young horses that we know are going to fit, and we're keeping them. We're just holding them back from some of the bigger events and saving them for the 6-year-olds. So sometimes I'm lucky, and I'll find one that someone will actually let us buy. But it's a very hard thing, and so that's why I'm always looking. And when I do, a horse isn't staying at that level anymore. They're almost impossible to replace. So it's a challenge.
You said your dad went with you. Does he have a horsey background?
No, nobody knows where I came from. No, nobody. Everybody's my mom's terrified. Like terrified, she won't touch a horse. She loves them, and she loves to watch. But no, everybody's terrified. Nobody rides.
And does Clancy ride?
She started to, and she has a deep affection and love for horses, and she loves to watch me compete. But she rides a little bit, but no, she likes the theater.
She's not doing barrels? The little girls usually like to do barrels.
I know. No, she kind of started, and she's more interested in singing and dancing.
Okay. Well, there you go. Now, how many, when you're competing, when you have a horse that you're competing at the top levels, like in eventing, how many shows will a top-level eventer do a year, Samantha?
Well, that's changing, too, because of the CIC and, well, I guess they call them the short format and the long format now, but...
What, four or five big ones a year? Maybe?
Not even that. Yeah, maybe 3 or 4.
So what is it with you guys? Is it, you know, how often will you compete at that top level, a top horse in a year?
Yeah, we have more than that, maybe 6, something like that. It depends on the age, but for the, you know, the 3-year-olds, of course, they'll be shown maybe 3 or 4 times. But that's a lot in a 3-year-old's year. And then as four and to 6-year-olds, we can do up to 6 or 8 because shows a year, because there's a lot of big shows with a lot of money up, so a lot of guys try to go to those. And that's the thing. So that's why these horses, to keep them, of course, they're still very usable, and they're still great horses when they're 6, but they've been shown a lot. So that starts to, you know, show up in the pen, and they only have so many big, great runs in them. So we have to, we're always conscientious of that, and that's why it's been a challenge. And then also to buy the aged horses, it's been a challenge. So we've decided to develop them ourselves, hold them back a bit. I was very fortunate. I bought a horse from Italy. You guys might remember him. Remember Yellow Jersey from the World Equestrian Games?
Yeah,
that's my new ride. That's my new ride.
Nice. Can they do, like, I know in the World Equestrian Games, we didn't have the freestyle, which is so much fun to watch. Can horses switch between classes if they have them at both show? If they have both classes at one show? Or do you specialize?
We do have a freestyle, and they can. And our freestyle, though, is a little bit more for the crowd. It's a little more fun, and, you know, we don't take it quite as seriously. Yeah, I kind of like the, is it Kerr? Or maybe that's just dressage. But
that's in the dressage.
Yeah, I love that. I love it when it's taken very seriously. And not that our freestylers don't take it seriously. It's just a little bit more fun. Maybe the money's not up in it like it is in the other classes and stuff. But I love those classes. So we do have them. But a lot of times you don't see a lot of trainers switching them between those classes at the show. You just a few guys do it, but not too many.
I think the big difference, Samantha, is what she said. It's the money. The big difference is they actually win money. See, that's the big difference right there.
Yeah, you're probably right.
it is because our culture of reining has just been a little bit different, and that's because we never had the, you know, the FEI and stuff. So it's always been based on money, and that's changing. We're getting more thrills from the crowd and being allowed to come to things like the World Equestrian Games. A lot of riders now value that more than the dollar. So that's a nice change because that does change the dynamic somewhat. And we're really thrilled to be seen by all the people that are attracted at the, like, say, the Rolex. Like, the crowds there are amazing. And that's become my favorite show of the year just because of the crowds. And they do put some good money up, there's no doubt about that, but it's exciting to go and have that Kentucky crowd. There's nothing like it. They're amazing there.
What do you think's been your favorite thing since the World Equestrian Games? What's the one thing you've done since then?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I'm going to say... just my recent matchup with this Yellow Jersey horse and a couple of the shows that we've hit, I guess just buying him and that partnership. We weren't sure where he was going to fit in the program, and because the World Equestrian Games really propelled us to keep on with the FEI events, even though it was a bit catastrophic, we still decided that was our goal and to hit the next World Equestrian Games. So we bought another horse, Wizard of Chick, who's brilliant, and Yellow Jersey, and so that's probably been my favorite part, is to keep on with that goal. Like, we, you know, right now we're focused on Normandy. It's awesome, you know. So I think that's probably my favorite part, is that just developing that program to keep going.
Super. So hopefully, Glennie Glenn, we will see you and in France in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, that's I hope so. That's the goal. We're learning French and everything.
Well, Lisa, before you go, I just have a quick question for you, and then we'll have to run. But you said, you know, with these horses really, you know, reaching their peak at six, what's the second, you know, we always talk about the second career for thoroughbreds and, you know, finding them homes as something else. What's a second career for a reiner? What do they end up doing after that?
I think that's the great thing about reiners, is because they're how broke we have to have them. And so they find homes in a variety of events, you know, some of the slower events like Western Pleasure and things like that, where they need the horses super collected and broke. They'll find homes like that. Lots of kids take on reiners, and they don't have any trouble finding another discipline. And so, you know, maybe they can't go into too many of the English disciplines because of their little quarter horses and stuff. But I always seem to find them homes doing a variety of jobs.
Well, that's terrific. That is a good thing. And they are so versatile. I mean, you know, they're obviously well trained. They can do lower level almost anything in the Western world. After that,
right? And now we've got some dressage happening in the Western world, and so they're wonderful to just have as, because they've been, most of them have been hauled all over the place. So, you know, for a nice trail horse or just a horse to have in your backyard, they're wonderful. And you know, I think the goal that people are starting to see is to make these horses. Allow these horses to have some longevity, and because I believe that we can keep our reiners showing. And I take it from the English world. I love to see 10-year-old horses out there, just starting to go. I think there's something to that.
Well, very good, Lisa. Thank you so much for stopping by today. We really appreciate it. It's so nice to get caught up with you again.
Yes, it's fantastic to talk to you again.
Well, I hope to see. I'm going to stop by the booth next year at Rolex, Glenn.
You better.
Yes.
You better. We'll be there.
Excellent.
We want to see
you.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck this year, Lisa.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Well, now it's time for our song, and Jared Rogerson is one of Jamie's favorites, and I figured that Samantha would probably like him too, because he's just a hot guy that sings, so, you know. So he's a lady's favorite, and we're going to play a little bit of him today, and he has a song called Just One of the Guys, and then we're going to be back with the Chronicle of the Horse. We're going to learn a little bit about trailer safety also after we get back from Jared Rogerson, Just One of the Guys.
She pulls up in that old pickup, in her dusty cowgirl boots and her faded Wrangler jeans. She's just some cowgirl you've hung out with since she was 17. Now she's 33. She don't seem like the kind to ever settle down. She's just riding on a natural mountain high. When she gets bucked off, she'll get up and shake it off. She's just one of the guys. She can rope and ride with all of us. She's cold as ice if you lose her trust. Don't believe those eyes. There's no such thing as a girl who's just one of the guys. If you find a girl like that, don't ever let her go. Friend, take my advice and don't ask me how I know. She's the perfect summer sunset if she ever lets it show. Trust me, I know. She can rope and ride with all of us. She's cold as ice if you lose her trust. Well, it's no disguise, don't believe those eyes. There's no such thing as a girl who's just one of the guys. Song. And there ain't no shame in treating her that that old pickup.
Well, that's Jared Rogerson. You can find all of his music at jaredrogerson.com. Well, Samantha, we have a caller on the line here, and I wanted to talk to her because she is providing the next prize for Really Bad Ads, which is going to happen in 2 weeks on the 15th when Jamie is back. And we have Paula on here. Good morning, Paula.
Morning, Glenn.
And you have a cool product that we saw at the last ADA. We met you there. And, you know, with the heat that's infected the country, one of our topics yesterday we ended up talking about was flies and how bad they are everywhere. And you have a product that are called, well, help me out here. Are they summer winnies?
The summer winnies are the summer socks that are fly. I never thought I would love flies, but we are loving flies this year.
Well, there's a lot of them, too.
There are a lot of them, too.
About summer winnies, what are they?
Well, summer winnies are a sock that was designed to protect the leg from the top of the hoof up to the knee, utilizing the best technologies in fiber science, including fibers that wick moisture from the skin, creating this very cool environment around the leg. And then the other fibers we combined are antimicrobial copper and silver embedded fibers, specially spun for us in a really tough manner. The yarn's incredible. But so we've created this cool and very clean environment around a horse's leg. It'll help protect legs as well as, you know, help sores and wounds heal as a result of removing the flies from the environment and putting that very beautiful, clean environment around the leg.
Well, and you know what they look like? They look like tube socks. They kind of look like tube socks. Obviously, they're made to fit around the horse's legs. And we would like some. I'll have to order some because Beaker, you know, he stands out here, and it's hot in Florida, and we just started to get the little flies right now. And it's just so amazing how what we learned the other day on Facebook from everybody posting is the different level of fly infestation and the different kinds of flies that you see all across the country, but it's a common problem that everybody has.
Oh yeah. And Florida's really suffering right now with the leg sores created by the flies because, you know, the flies don't really die out here. They don't go away all winter long. They're busy chewing on legs. And you know, I've had people comment that they are becoming more and more antibiotic resistant, these sores, to healing. And so you've got to get really unique. When went to creating this sock, we knew we could create a really very effective fly protection. But to go beyond that and really get into the science of fiber, just brought this product to be exactly what we knew would not only meet the market's expectations, horse owners' expectations, but go way beyond that. The socks not only just protect the leg, but when you stop the horse from that incessant, that obsessive stomping, you find that their feet hold together as well. They are no longer splitting and cracking hoof. Your shoe sets are staying on a lot longer. I've posted some of our horses. I've posted some of our horses' hooves, photographs.
Oops, are you still there? Oh, I think we lost her.
Ooh.
She's gone.
Oopsie daisy.
Yeah, anyway, you can find more about the socks at winniewarmers.com. They also make a winter version, but the summer version is what will be given away in the next Really Bad Ads, and that's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks. Get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com, and we'll save them for the next time that we do that. And Jennifer, she calls back, thank her, and tell her, I don't know what happened, we just lost her connection. But that's you can find it at winniewarmers.com, and that'll be the next prize. Well, our next guest up is going to be Lisa from the Chronicle of the Horse. She'll be here in just a couple of minutes. And we did talk a little bit about what you have going on this week's Eventing Radio Show. How do you think the show is going to change from what it's been in the past? Where do you see the changes coming in? You know, what's going to make it kind of new and exciting other than you're on it?
Well,
I think we are going to be less competition-based and more focusing on information, education, entertainment. It's going to be more chatting and chatting to people, I think. With the format, you know, I think Eventing Nation covers events very well and it can get results out and news out very quickly, which we, you know, with the format of the Eventing Radio Show coming out on Thursdays, there's no point in trying to do that. So instead, we'll try and do more feature-style things that are more interesting. And
I agree. I'm looking forward to that, too. And I think you did that. You started that very well this week with Kathy Weishoff when you know, she was talking about how to pick a trainer. And I think you did a good job of really picking her brain for an hour about things that are really relevant to the amateur rider out there.
Kathy, I mean, there are so many things I could have talked to Kathy about. Kathy has ridden at Four Star, I mean, all over the world. She's ridden at Burley, she's ridden at Rolex, she's ridden in England, she's ridden in America. She's an ICP instructor, she's a course designer, she helps the O'Connors run their summer camp, she helps them in the 10-minute box, she helps. I mean, she is the chairman of the Area 8. She wears so many hats, we could have picked one topic and talked for an hour. So, and there are so many people like that in eventing, and I think I'm going to try and pick a couple of people that we'll hear from regularly every month, and then we'll pick one person maybe every week and speak to them for longer. But I'm a little overwhelmed right now because I hardly know where to begin, but I think once we sort of get a schedule and sort it out a little bit, I think it'll be really fun, and I think people will begin to know what to expect, and I'll know what to expect, and I'm really looking forward to it, and I think it'll be super. But there are so many fascinating people and so many knowledgeable people and so many people with amazing stories, and everyone just shares a love of the sport and a love of the horse, and I can't wait to share their stories. It's just going, I'm really looking forward to it.
You know, I always said, and one of the reasons I started the Horse Radio Network is I've always said that every horse person, no matter what level, whether you're a backyard horse owner like we are really now, don't compete anymore, but whether you're a backyard horse owner who trail rides or you are, you know, you're a top-level competitor, every horse person has a story. We all have stories to tell, you know, and I think that comes out when we interview, no matter who we interview, and you're the same way too, and Eventing Nation does a good job of finding amateurs with those stories and who really have stories to tell. You know, I love the series you guys did from just regular lower level eventers who talked about their first time going to Rolex, you know, those different stories that were out there as well. It's just fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. So, yeah, I mean, I think we'll have lots of that. And we're going to have, like, Samantha St-Jacques is going to come on. She's Pierre's wife. Obviously, we have Pierre as our spotlight dressage rider. And she went to the Olympics for Canada as an event rider. And now she's just had a beautiful baby son. So that's an interesting dynamic, being the wife of an Olympic dressage rider, being an Olympic event rider yourself, and now being a mother. So she'll come on regularly and talk about that. We're going to have Nico Morgan has agreed just recently to come on every now and then and talk about, he's a professional photographer and goes to all the events in England, actually, and he's going to talk about that and give us hints on how to take pictures of horses, but also talk about sort of what it's like going around the circuit in England as a photographer. And he's very funny and very knowledgeable, and so that'll be fun. We'll have, obviously, Dr. Laura Werner, who events herself and is a vet, is going to come on with little segments regularly. And then we'll have people talking about, just interesting features once a week. So, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Samantha. Appreciate that. I'm looking forward to it, too. And Samantha's first episode is out right now at Eventing Radio Show. EventingRadio.com. It's EventingRadio.com.
Yeah.
You'll find it right there. Take a listen. Hey, and you know, even if you're not interested in eventing, there's good information in there that I think that you'll get a lot out of. And I think you'll find that with all of our different shows here as well. Well, our next guest is up. Of course, it is Thursday. It's time for the Chronicle Report with Lisa from the Chronicle of the Horse. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. How are you, Glenn?
Good. How are you doing up there?
I'm doing good.
You got a friend of mine just started working with you guys.
Who is that?
Beth?
Yeah, I just met her last week. She just started.
Yeah, she just started, and I'm so excited that she, you know, she got a job with you. She's a great person. I think you're going to like Beth when you get to know her a little
bit.
Yeah,
she seems super. She seems really nice.
Well, now, this week, you guys are continuing your big 70, it's 75th year, right, in business? Is it 75 or 150? I can't remember.
75.
Seems like a million,
hopefully,
actually.
We'll make
you guys
it
have just been... You guys have just been around forever at the Chronicle, so everybody just assumed you were always there, you know?
Yeah, it's true. We've been around since, you know, I think cavemen actually had Chronicles that they read as well. It was like, you know, carved on the walls or something.
Yeah, you have the first piece of charcoal they used too, don't you, there at the
yeah.
Chronicle Museum?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, now, you had an article that popped in today, I think it's, well, today or yesterday on your front page. And what you're starting to do now is go through the history of the Chronicle by decade. Is that what I'm gathering?
Yep, that is just part of what we're doing. This is like our web portion of the anniversary celebration. So each staffer was assigned a decade. And basically what your job was to read through. We have all our old magazine in these bound volumes, so there's a volume for each 6 months. So your job was to read through your own personal decade and just find the most interesting and or bizarre things from that decade. So I had the 50s, which turned out to be like a real treasure trove of both awesome and bizarre things. And that
story
went up on the website.
Tell us about
some
of them.
Yeah, that went up yesterday. One of the most interesting things to me, anyway, was at the beginning of the 50s, throughout, you know, the 40s and earlier, the Olympic team was chosen through the military. So you had to be a member of the military to ride on an Olympic team. 1952 was the first Olympic Games where you could be a civilian. So there was, like, all this discussion, you know, what's the best way to choose a team? How are we going to decide who should be on the team and who's going to own these horses? And there's a link to an article as well about if women should be allowed to ride on the teams. I guess that had not been allowed previously. So that was kind of interesting. You know, sometimes you go back and read these historical things, and the thing you think is like, wow, not much has changed. We're still talking about the best way to select teams, and we're still talking about who should own team horses. But then there are some things that obviously have changed. We no longer question, like, if Karen O'Connor should be allowed on the eventing team because she's a woman, which obviously is a good thing. But it talks about the first Olympic dressage trials, and it talks about the dressage test that they did. And I found that's completely insane. The dressage test was 15 minutes long.
What? Did they take an intermission for, like, Coke and popcorn?
So. And I was just, like, I mean, it's bad enough if you'd have to ride it, but I was also imagining, like, the Chronicle reporters who were covering the dressage trials and having to watch, like, 15-minute tests over and over again and how...
Imagine the poor spouses.
I know.
Jeez, we think it's bad now. What are they now, 7 minutes? Are they 7 minutes now? That's about right, right?
Yeah, I think they're about 7 minutes. Although this year they have that Olympic special, which is supposed to be closer to 5 minutes. But 15 minutes, I cannot imagine.
And they were doing piaffs and passages and extended and trots and walks and gallops and the whole thing.
Yeah, they did all that stuff. And I don't know, maybe the walk portion was like 5 minutes in the middle or something, but that has to be hard for the horses, too.
Yeah, it's like you take a drink break, you know, the soda, you know, you go to the judge's stand halfway through. Wow, 15 minutes. It's insane.
Yeah, I thought that was crazy. But it looks like they did most of the same things. It says there was a figure eight at counter gallop, which I assume is similar to counter canter and flying changes and piassantiphage. So it doesn't seem like the meat of the test has changed too much, just the length, thankfully.
Wow. Now, it's, you know, there were other issues I read in the article, too, that I found interesting. You know, the topics of discussion back then really haven't changed a lot because, you know, you said that there were topics like retraining X-race horses for horse show work, you know, true amateurs versus fake amateurs. That conversation about amateur versus professional is still going on today.
Oh, yeah, and they were already talking about, like, what's the best way to word this rule to define an amateur? And I cannot imagine a year when that won't come up at the USEF Convention. We are still trying to determine a rule that will properly define an amateur versus a professional. There's an article I linked to about judging at horse shows, you know, which is obviously still such a huge thing. And the first line made me laugh. It says, the horse show judging situation is now, as it has been for years, like Mark Twain's observation about the weather. Everyone complains about it, but no one seems to do anything about it, which obviously still is holding true today. But yeah, it's just amazing. I linked to, in the story as well, an article about the eventing trials, which took place in, I think it was 1955. And it's this incredible story about Jeb Wofford, who I need to confirm, but assume is somehow related to everyone's favorite Jimmy Wofford. And he rides his horse, Benny Grimes, in the trials, which were held in Nashville in, like, July or something. I'm not sure if you've ever been to Nashville in July, but it's super hot. And they said the temperature reached up into, like, below hundreds. It was 105 or something. And Jeb Wofford was recovering from dysentery, but somehow, like, thought he should ride anyway. And so this was one of the first events where they used an intercom system on cross country. And they said about halfway through the course, they could sort of hear Jeb talking to himself, and the people on the intercom were saying, like, he didn't seem to know where he was. And they were concerned about him. And then I guess near the end of the course, he actually passed out on the horse's neck. And somehow the horse finished the course. There was something called a run-in at the end, which I don't know much about. I guess it was maybe sort of like a short bit at the end where there weren't any more jumps, but you were still sort of coming in from the course. And yeah, I guess he was completely passed out. The horse just came in on his own. And, you know, Jeb came too, and he was super upset. He was like, I didn't finish the course. I'm not going to get to go to the Olympics. And they were like, no, you finished the course. Your horse brought you in. It's just absolutely amazing.
They used to buckle them to the saddles back then in the 50s, apparently.
Apparently.
Velcro wasn't invented yet, so they just buckled them in.
Yeah.
You know, it is funny to hear you say certain things because, you know, Samantha, you've announced at horse shows, and here she is talking about the first intercom, the first announcing, you know, speaker system at a horse show. You don't think about that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And they were, when the story was published, they said it was like this military advancement, that they could use an intercom system, that it came from the military, and that it was this crazy cool thing that all of a sudden they could talk to each other across the horse show grounds, which if you think about is huge, and to not have had that must have been really obnoxious.
Well, and that was at the beginning days too, in the 50s, Lisa, of the FEI really coming to play in the United States. They were still discussing about whether they were going to use FEI, you know, FEI rules in the United States competitions. That was all at the very beginning of that for us here in the United States.
Yeah, that was interesting, too. They talked about if they should start incorporating FEI rules into things like the show jumping, because I guess prior to that, if a horse had a rub in show jumping, that counted as some sort of penalty. And they were saying that the fact that it did was leading to a lot of people pulling their horses, which, again, like, pulling is still something we talk about a lot. And they were saying if we could switch to the FEI rules where, you know, having a rail down was a penalty but a rub wasn't, that it might help you know, sort of eliminate some of the need for polling that was happening. So I thought that was interesting as well.
So now, are you going up through the years? Will next week there be one on the 60s, or how's that working?
Yep, next week, next Wednesday, there will be one in the 60s, and then the 70s, and the 80s, and the 90s, and then the 2000s. We're going all the way up.
Were you just assigned your decade, or did you get to pick which one?
We got to choose, but I don't know. None of us really had a rhyme or reason to why we chose the ones we did, I don't think. We just sort of shouted out, I'll pick the 50s, I'll pick the 60s. And, but, yeah.
I think Lisa would like, you liked bebop music. I think that's why. You liked 50s bebop music.
That is my personal favorite, yeah. It's been a cool project. It was very time consuming going through all the old issues, but it was just intensely interesting to read everything again, and all the photos are absolutely amazing as well.
I guarantee you could actually charge people to come in to the Chronicles office and sit there, and you could charge them so much a day and they would pay it to come sit look through those old Jennifer would pay that in a minute to go do that.
I don't know. We kind of need to pay someone to organize it. So maybe we could switch that around and they could pay us to go up in our attic and get all the photos in order. Because they're really not in order. Sorry?
It needs the Dewey Decimal System in the basement?
It seriously does. It's kind of sad and frightening how disorganized all the old photos and things are.
Well, thank you, Lisa. This is great. What a great article. People can find it at cronofhorse.com, and it's right on the homepage right now, isn't it, Phil? It was when I looked last.
It might have come down. I think we might have something on Devon up there at this moment. But if you look on the right side, there's always a link to most popular articles, and it's up there.
Okay, good. Good. Well, and you also, had an article there about Dr. Farrell, and I saw, another article about the Pollard trailer accident that we talked about earlier today. So you can find all of those at cronofhorse.com. Thank you so much. Say hi to Beth for me.
I will. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Lisa. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wouldn't it be cool to take a look at some of those old ones? I mean, you would probably love to sit in the archives of Horse and Hound. They've been around for, over 100 years or something over there in England.
That would be heaven. I would love that.
You would pay to go do that for a day. See, they can make money, part of the rule is you have to put them, you have to organize, 10 years worth while you're there.
A day wouldn't be long enough. I could spend a week at least.
Yeah, and they go back. Horse and Hound, I think, is even older than that. Aren't they like 70 or 100 some years old? They've been around forever.
I'm sure. Forever.
Yeah. Are they still as popular, Horse and Hound, over in England?
Of course.
Does everybody still get it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Look forward to it. What day did it come?
Thursday's Glen. Thursday's Horse and Hound Day.
So were you waiting by the mailbox, waiting for it to come, or was it delivered to your front step?
No, it came. It comes with the papers.
Oh, it does? Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Okay. So it's delivered like a newspaper?
Yep.
Only in England would they deliver a horsey newspaper to your house. Only in England would that happen.
I miss it.
We're going to get to spend some time over there this summer, so you get to check it out then.
Yeah.
Let's introduce the next segment. This is Tell Us Who Dr. Werner Is.
Dr. Werner is wonderful. She's recently married, and I don't know her new name, but I think she's sticking to her maiden name for professional purposes, which is lucky for me. She is originally from Kentucky, moved to California, was active on the eventing scene there, is, as I said, the only female surgeon here in Kentucky, is very, very knowledgeable, very efficient, wonderful vet and surgeon, but also just a wonderful person. And is going to be a regular contributor on the Eventing Radio Show. And I talked to her recently about trailer safety because she works at Haggard's and talk to me a little bit about what you should do, God forbid, if you're in a trailer accident, what you should carry with you and how you should react.
All right, here we go.
So we are going to talk about different things each week, and I encourage anyone who has topics that they want, they can leave it on the Facebook page and we'll talk about that. But this week, with the tragic accident that, you know, with the Pollard, and there were some comments, we thought we'd talk about, should that happen to you, what's the best, how should you react, what you should do, and what's the best course of action?
Well, oftentimes, if there is a severe trailer accident, it's going to involve multiple emergency personnel, so it may involve veterinarians as well as firefighters and such on the scene to help with the accident scene, and sometimes, unfortunately, that we may need the heavy equipment that firefighters or police personnel have to help remove parts of the trailer or help extract the horses from the trailer by cutting parts of the trailer and such. So it's usually a team effort in order to help with everybody, and you know, sometimes, like I said, finding a veterinarian in the area that does have some emergency training, and then also probably finding access to where your nearest referral hospital is to then have that facility available to transport your horses to. There are several hospitals that will have equine ambulances or have an access to an equine ambulance, which is sometimes necessary to have winches or other equipment that's needed to get the horses. Oftentimes we will anesthetize the horse and then extract it from the trailer and then take it to the referral hospital if the horse is stable enough to do so. But often horses will panic in those type of situations, so, and they can hurt themselves more, hurt the others around them trying to help them. So it's important, like I said, to stabilize them, but possibly if we need to, anesthetize them to get them out of that situation to a safer place. Then.
And if you're the driver or the groom, should you try and go into the trailer and help your horse, or should you, what's the best thing immediately when something happens like that? Do you know?
It is. I mean, I think everybody who is hauling horses, especially hauling horses long distance, should have an emergency kit on them with some basic drugs. And so that's a great, have a great relationship with your veterinarian that, you know, have an emergency kit with some sedatives or anti-inflammatories in your emergency kit to have, and that way, under your veterinarian's direction, you could administer, if you can access the horse safely, that you might be able to administer them the sedatives or anti-inflammatories right away, at least until that emergency personnel would get there. So I guess most of my clients will have an emergency kit with them, and that's important too, to have those drugs, and again, just under your veterinarian's, you know,
for dire emergencies.
Right, for dire emergencies, but under your veterinarian's guidance, you know, to help possibly administer those drugs if you can safely access the horse. If you can't safely access the horse, then, you know, wait for the personnel to get there. But if the horse is really struggling, it may help sometimes to give them a very, very small dose of tranquilizer, again, per your veterinarian's recommendation, to settle the horse down. It's always safer to stay on the back side of the horse, so by its head or by its withers, that is a safer place. Sometimes you can help by calm the horse by a blindfold will often help, or you can also help by sitting on the horse's head and neck to keep them down. That will help, but again, stay away from their front feet or their hind feet that might be kind of flailing around if that's in that sort of situation.
And then once you get them off the trailer and to either your vet or hopefully home, best case scenario, what do you look for in terms of shock or in terms of other injuries that you can't necessarily see? How do you monitor?
Right. I would recommend that the trailer accidents I've recommended, I do recommend that they stay at the nearest referral hospital for a few days just for monitoring, because some stuff doesn't come up right away. There might be they might seem stable, you know, especially with the excitement of everything that's happened. They might seem stable enough, and then some things such as abdominals or trauma to their chest with bleeding or a diaphragmatic hernia or a spleen tear may not be evident right away. So I always like to keep them at least for a day or two, watch them. We can perform ultrasounds of their chest and abdomen, you know, serially just to evaluate them and make sure make sure everything looks okay, and run blood work, that type of thing, just to monitor them overnight, because again, sometimes the traumas may not show up right away.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
I just obviously want to express my condolences to the Pollards, and one of the horses was kind of close to me. It belonged to a client of mine in California, so Jude's Law was a horse very near and dear to my heart as well too, so it is quite upsetting to me as well too, because I've known the horse for a long time. So
obviously, you were recording that in the clinic, Samantha. Were you in the clinic at the time?
Yes.
Now, this is just part. There's a second part to this trailer safety that you can hear at the Eventing Radio Show on the current episode that's up there, so 198. So you can hear the rest of that. But thank you for doing that. Appreciate it. And it, as I said earlier in the show, it's just something we just never think about.
No. No, it was interesting. Yeah. And Dr. Slovis is on the second part, and he had some interesting tips as well. So.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you so much, Samantha, for being on the show today. We really appreciate it. Now, tomorrow we have one of the other new co-hosts of the here on the shows at the Horse Radio Network, and that's Reese Kossler. Stanfield will be on with me tomorrow. We recorded the first dressage radio show, which will be out this afternoon with her. So you get to meet Reese and learn more about Reese, who will be hosting one of the co-hosts on the Dressage Radio Show, and she'll be filling in tomorrow. No really bad ads tomorrow, as we said. They'll be back in a couple of weeks, but, you know, you can start sending yours in. You can start sending yours in now to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. Get on Craigslist. It literally will take you 3 minutes to find bad ads in the horse section on Craigslist there, in the farm section. It doesn't take long at all. There's a lot of them out there. Well, Samantha, thank you so much again. We look forward to having you on board, and welcome back.
Great. Thank you very much. It's been super fun.
And we'll see you over in the eventing side, on the eventing radio show.
Yep,
all right.
That's right.
And as Jamie would say, fay, neuter, and gel. And as I would say, I'll have another. See you, Sammy.
We'll be back. Thanks, Glenn.